Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, June 19th. Before we get to BP, a look at the global markets. This coming week is going to be a critical one as the G20 meets in Toronto for what could be a highly divisive gathering. He's going to take all of the diplomatic skill of President Obama, Angela Merkel, Nicolas Sarkozy, and China's leadership for this not to devolve into a shouting match of sorts. After all, they have largely different agendas. President Obama, for one, in a letter to economic leaders ahead of Toronto, warned that the G20 must reaffirm our unity of purpose when significant weaknesses continue in several of the member countries' economies. Obama said he was concerned about continued heavy reliance on exports by some countries with already large external surpluses. I also want to underscore that market-oriented exchange rates are essential to global economic vitality, he said, talking about China in both instances without naming them. Obama and the United States want the G20 to encourage domestic consumption, but this is at a time when Europe in particular has deficit reduction fever, hardly conducive to encouraging the consumer to open the pocketbook. The U.S., on the other hand, seeks to continue to stimulate the economy through deficit spending, only now Congress is beginning to fight back. What was once a $200 billion package of increased jobless benefits, more state aid, and protection for doctors facing steep Medicare rate cuts was whittled down to $120 billion and then voted down by the Senate this week, falling four votes short of the needed 60. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan in an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal. An urgency to rein in budget deficits seems to be gaining some traction among American lawmakers. If so, it is none too soon. Perceptions of a large U.S. borrowing capacity are misleading. Despite the surge in federal debt to the public during the past 18 months to $8.6 trillion from $5.5 trillion, inflation and long-term interest rates, the typical symptoms of fiscal excess, have remained remarkably subdued. This is regrettable because it is fostering a sense of complacency that can have dire consequences. In Europe, the story hasn't changed. France did hike the retirement age to 62 from 60, but by 2018. It was back in 1983 that François Mitterrand lowered it to 60, and as a result, today only 13% of French aged 60 to 64 are in the workplace. The French are not taking even this minimal change to 62 well. Greek public transit workers staged strikes this week, as did various unions in Spain. And if you travel a lot on business to Europe, I'm going to give you a valuable heads up. Mark the date, September 29, on your calendar, as in do not travel to Europe around that time, because various outfits are encouraging a general strike across the continent, a European day of action. But one area where Europe is showing signs of getting the picture, aside from its ill-received deficit-cutting measures, is the issue of bank stress test. Spain was the first to announce it would put its banks through the exercise in order to provide more transparency on sovereign debt exposures for each, and the EU has now promised that stress tests for all the major banks will be completed by end of July. The stress test mechanism in the U.S. last year proved to be highly critical in jump-starting the recovery and improving confidence. The problem in Europe's case is there seems to be no one set of rules, and you'd expect each country to try to protect its main institutions at all costs. Then there's China. Premier Wen warned the G20 not to come down hard on China and its currency policy. Nope, wouldn't be prudent at this time, he said. China is going to pursue its own economic agenda and restructuring, and it's unreasonable to expect Chinese workers to fill the void of the U.S. in being a consumer of last resort. Chinese workers just not earning that much to begin with. Speaking of wages, as labor activism continues to spread, Wen said that as a new generation moves from the rural villages to the urban areas to work in factories and on building sites, they will not accept the harsh working conditions and low wages that their parents endured. Rural migrant workers are the main army of the contemporary Chinese industrial workforce, said Wen. Our wealth and our tall buildings are all distillations of your hard work and sweat. Your labor is a glorious thing, and it should be respected by society. In a nutshell, they need to be paid more. China's official and unofficial mouthpieces this week all said the same thing. Wages need to rise to protect stability and transform society. The All China Federation of Trade Unions, which is designed to represent workers' rights, says employees have not had a pay rise in 5 years. But as the BBC reports, some of the workers who have gone on strike for higher wages in recent weeks have accused this organization of colluding with local officials and factory managers to try to force staff back to work before their demands have been met. Chinese media has also been banned from reporting on some of the strikes. As to China's housing boom, economist Stephen Roach said there's no nationwide property bubble, that prices are supported by solid demand, but others, such as Nomura, say prices are slated to fall 20% over the next 12 to 18 months, to which I would say that's not a disaster. No doubt, measures to rein in the housing market are seeing results, but I'll concede that when it comes to the high-end market, there are legitimate concerns. The World Bank weighed in this week on its growth forecast for China, now pegged at 9.5% for 2010 after the sizzling 11.9% first quarter rate and 8.5% in 2011. Just one other note, amidst Congress bitching about currency policy, which had zero to do with the financial crisis, U.S. exports to China were up 50% in the first quarter year over year. As to the U.S. economy, there was a slew of data this week. Inflation as measured by the producer and consumer price indexes remains non-existent. The core PPI, ex food and energy, is up 1.3% year over year through May, while the core CPI is up 0.9% the last 12 months. The lowest such rate since 1966. I'm going to pause just for a second here as I take a little water. Rough going this morning. Of course, this means it's tough to raise prices, so profit margins will not be expanding anytime soon. In general, but I do not as yet fall into the outright deflation camp. The news on the manufacturing end was solid, with May industrial production coming in better than expected, up 1.2%, and with the likes of Caterpillar touting the fact its worldwide sales of machinery were up 11% in May, while Federal Express said people are too pessimistic about the recovery in global trade. FedEx's international shipments are up 23%, but the company nonetheless guided earnings lower. On the flip side, Best Buy, the largest consumer electronics retailer, issued a lousy report for its quarter with same-store sales up just 1.9%. But when you're looking at the U.S. economy, it's still all about housing and jobs. On the latter, the jobless claims figure for the week was awful, 472,000, when many were figuring we'd be closer to 400,000 by now and looking ahead earlier in the year. The White House is destined to have to explain a 9% plus unemployment rate come November's midterm vote, and it won't be easy. As for housing, the immediate future looks bleak here as well. May housing starts were far short of expectations as the first-time homebuyer tax credit ran off. May building permits were also abysmal. Nationwide, the foreclosure picture is not getting any better, and here in New Jersey, I see more and more homes going on the market, more than you'd expect for the spring-summer selling season. Longtime reader EC wrote last week to inform me that he is seeing the foreclosure issue in New Jersey up close and personal. EC having a mail route, and no one knows the local economic picture better than our nation's mail carriers. The bottom line is whether or not you subscribe to a double dip in housing prices with few exceptions are not going up. At best, they will continue to stagnate, and along the Gulf Coast, they could outright crater anew depending on where the oil lands. Enough damage has already been done to set back recovery for a long spell there. Much more, and it could spell the death knell for many a community. Just a note on commercial real estate, while I've read of some stability in the New York and Los Angeles markets, PIMCO doesn't see any real pickup for 3 to 5 years in the sector, with $500 billion in additional inventory hitting the markets as lenders dispose of the properties or restructure debt. As for the Deepwater Horizon disaster and the resulting spill, of all the topics I've raised in the 11-plus years of writing this column, this must be the leader in my favored maxim, wait 24 hours. Just think how many of the facts have changed since the beginning of this debacle. For starters, we were initially told by BP the well was only releasing 1,000 barrels a day. Then for a long time, the official figure was 5,000, then 12,000 to 19,000, then 12,000 to 25,000. Then we were told BP would soon be capturing 28,000, but we were still using a total of 12 to 25,000, and all of us could see a boatload of oil still coming up. So then our incident commander, Thad Allen, said it was 30,000 total. Then just hours before President Obama's Tuesday night address, it became 60,000. One thing we do know for certain without having to wait 24 hours, you cannot believe one word coming out of the mouth of a BP official, because even as they are ponying up an initial $20 billion after being strong-armed by Obama, it's about survival and mitigating damages. You will never get the truth out of BP, just like you never got the truth out of the tobacco industry. President Obama, for the first time, took to the Oval Office to address the issue as his poll numbers for handling the spill and its aftermath plummet. According to a USA Today Gallup poll, 71% said Obama hasn't been tough enough on BP, 53% rate Obama's handling of the spill poor or very poor. Make no mistake, we will fight the spill with everything we've got for as long as it takes, he said. We will make BP pay for the damage their company has caused, and we will do whatever's necessary to help the Gulf Coast and its people recover from this tragedy. Beyond compensating the people of the Gulf in the short term, it's also clear we need a long-term plan to restore the unique beauty and bounty of this region. And then Obama hijacked the issue for his own political purposes. Now is the moment for this generation to embark on a national mission to unleash American innovation and seize control of our own destiny. As he went on about our clean energy future, when I thought what matters most is to stop the freaking flow of oil and clean the damn stuff up before we see bread lines down in the Gulf. And believe me, that day could be coming. The Washington Post, in critiquing Obama's speech, said, quote, his remarks were largely an 18-minute compilation of what he has said about the spill over the past several weeks. But as each item comes up, we need to wait 24 hours. The day after the speech, BP acquiesced and agreed to set aside $20 billion, suspending its dividend at the same time. And I suspect that if Americans were polled this weekend, they would give the president better marks on his handling of the oil giant. But then you need to wait another 24 hours because many of the folks on the Gulf are not only out of cash, they are missing out on mortgage, car, and boat payments. It's about reality, as in this passage from a report by Campbell Robertson of the New York Times on what is actually taking place in the communities being impacted. Quote, it was late May. Oil had been creeping into the passes around Grand Isle. Two fleets of fishing boats were supposed to be laying out boom. But the boats were gathered on the inland side of the bay, wrong side, anchored idly as the oil oozed in from the Gulf of Mexico. BP officials said they had no way of contacting the workers on the boats. You're watching the oil come in, said the local emergency preparedness director for Jefferson Parish, and they can't even move. For much of the last 2 months, the focus of the response to the Deepwater Horizon explosion has been a mile underwater, 50 miles from shore, where successive efforts involving containment domes, top kills, and junk shots have failed, and a spill cam shows tens of thousands of barrels of oil hemorrhaging into the Gulf each day. Campbell Robertson continues. Closer to shore, the efforts to keep the oil away from land have not fared much better, despite a response effort involving thousands of boats, tens of thousands of workers, and millions of feet of containment boom. From the beginning, the effort has been bedeviled by a lack of preparation, organization, urgency, and clear lines of authority among federal, state, and local officials, as well as BP. As a result, officials and experts say the damage to the coastline and wildlife has been worse than it might have been if the response had been faster and orchestrated more effectively. The information is not flowing, Florida Senator Bill Nelson said. The decisions are not timely, the resources are not produced, and as a result, you have a big mess with no command and control. That was Campbell Robertson, New York Times. Again, wait 24 hours. The president may have a good news cycle or two, but the reality of the situation will overwhelm the spin or BP's $20 billion fund. This story is a long, long way to play out. As to Texas Congressman Joe Barton's statement during the House hearing, in which BP CEO Tony Hayward was being grilled, quote, I think it is a tragedy of the first proportion that a private corporation can be subjected to what I would characterize as a shakedown, in this case a $20 billion shakedown, close quote. There's a kernel of truth to the use of the word that riled so many up, shakedown. But especially coming from a guy who is the king of oil money, Barton's remark was ill-timed and careless. House Republicans scrambled to distance themselves from it. Rising star Adam Putnam of Florida said, quote, Barton owes the people of the Gulf Coast an apology, not the CEO of the company who may have cut corners to produce this horrific national tragedy. House Minority Leader John Boehner said, quote, BP agreed to fund the cost of this cleanup from the beginning, and I'm glad they're being held accountable. Barton was forced to issue not one but two apologies during the remainder of the House hearing in an attempt to make it clear he wanted BP to pay for the mess it created. But the Wall Street Journal opined BP deserves to pay full restitution for the damages caused, but it ought to do so via legal means, not under what Texas Republican Joe Barton rightly called the pressure of a shakedown. The American people seem to have concluded that they dislike both BP for causing this disaster and the White House for appearing to exploit it without stopping the leak, and maybe that's the right response. BP at first sounded arrogant and now is so obsequious it won't even stand up for its legal rights. But it's hard to know who is more unlovable, BP or its Washington expropriators. That's the Wall Street Journal. On Friday, Tony Hayward was told by BP Chairman Carl Enric Zwanberg to return to London. Bob Dudley, a U.S. citizen, will spearhead BP's response from here on. Zwanberg said, quote, it is clear that Tony has made remarks that have upset people, but here is also a man that has programmed maybe 100 hours of TV time and 500 interviews. It's been a difficult period, and as long as we don't close the well and take care of this, there will be criticisms about many things. Stocks rose for a second straight week, with the Dow Jones adding 2.3% to 10,450. The S&P 500 is up 2.4%, and NASDAQ a solid 2.9% to 2309. Actually, stocks were flat except for a nice rally on Tuesday as investors took heart in the manufacturing data and a respite in the European debt crisis. Otherwise, I wouldn't make too much of the past 2 weeks. As noted earlier, after all, housing and the jobs picture are still moribund. I will be back with you next Saturday. Have a great week and happy Father's Day.